You are listening to a Geekcast Radio podcast. Hello and welcome to the new Off the Cuff. I'm your host, as always, Michael Powers. This new format we've got going on where each week the episode will consist of about 30, 35 minutes of me sitting down across from a random host most of the time. And we're going to play a little closer to the namesake of the podcast, which is Off the Cuff. It will be the guest responsibility, probably 90-95% of the time, to bring a completely random topic to talk about for about 30 minutes. So with that in mind, I mean, obviously we're hoping for some feedback in the forums and stuff like that. But we will also probably do some video game coverage, because like I said, we can talk about anything here. And just play it a little closer to the whole Off the Cuff namesake. So with that in mind, guest on our first show with the new format is a voice you probably all know and maybe love. I have Arthur Danner.
Hi.
I would say welcome back, but we've both been gone just as long.
I know. So welcome back to both of us.
Welcome back, us.
Welcome back, us.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. I just wanted and this show might go on a little longer because it's the first one, the inaugural one. Danner and I actually also haven't really talked to each other in probably almost as long.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
we chat.
Chat
with text and stuff, but
there hasn't been any in-depth conversation.
No. So this is kind of you guys are witnessing a little bro union. here for a little bit. But yeah, I wanted to do something that was fun and always constantly changing. And I thought the shorter show structure might lend itself to, you know, get in and get out and get on with your life, because we're all, you know, the four of us are all pretty busy, and the new Off the Cuff isn't going to be just limited to Danner and Joe and Sean Z. I plan on having other hosts from around Geekcast Radio, like Dan and Mike and Steve and Kevin, all come on and sit opposite me. I've kind of, in my head, I kind of saw this like a, almost like a late night talk show kind of thing, where I'm sitting behind my desk, like doing an interview more or less, but more just, you know, two people, you know, shooting the shit. So, so you want to get this underway?
Sure. We can do that.
What do you want to talk about tonight, Danner?
Well, my thought was, I've been, compiling a list that may or may not ever get used.
Tell me about it.
Of the greatest video games of all time, according to myself. And while I was doing this list, I just was kind of curious, as you know, there in the opinions of every gamer out there, there's always these games that are like the best games of all time. But then there's also the games that are, you know, near and dear to our heart that may not exactly get the recognition that we feel that they deserve. So I basically call, basically I would call this the segment or the topic the over under, if you will, the most overrated games and the most underrated games. And why you feel, why do you feel like these underrated games deserve the prestige that they don't seem to get? And why do we just not get why some of these games are considered the best of all time?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of glad that you tipped what your topic was going to be before we actually sat down, because since
it's a thinking man's topic.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, obviously we could totally do it off the cuff, but I've been excuse me, I've been since you mentioned it in the Facebook chat, I've been constantly, you know, in between refreshing my web browser, constantly trying to come up with, because you said pick two.
Yes.
So, holy cow! Why don't you go first?
Well, my first one's almost a combo one, because granted, this is more of a, I don't understand why one's overrated and one's underrated, and they're both highly revered games. But one I feel doesn't deserve the prestige that it's given, and I feel it gets the prestige that is given because, I'll just sort of dancing around the subject. Final Fantasy VII has always been a game that I think it's a good game. It's fun. I don't understand why it just gets the prestige that it does, but I do understand, because I feel it's overrated because I feel that it was one of the first games that everybody picked up when they first got into gaming in the PlayStation generation. So I feel like those of us that suffered through the rest of the Final Fantasy games or enjoyed the rest of the Final Fantasy games, I feel the people that hold 7 on such a high pedestal never experienced the beginning of the series. And it seems to me that's where they jumped in, and they put it on this pedestal because it was their first big experience with Final Fantasy VII, and it was, you know, considered the best at the time. Where I feel that it was okay, it was a good game, but 6 was way better, and I feel that 6 is the better game. And it's like I've said, 6 and 7 are both considered the two great games of the series. For some reason, also Final Fantasy X is held in those regards, which I've never understood, because I think that game's shit. But I'm not talking about that one. So I just, I personally don't understand why 7 is held as highly as it is, when I feel that 6 has always been the superior game.
For future reference in the show, I think one of the, because to avoid the lot of like, yeah, I agree with you, and then nothing ever again is said, you know, there's a whole bunch of like just everyone patting each other on the back going on. I know that some people kind of like it, at least when you and I get on each other's nerves.
Always.
So I made the decision that I was going to attempt to take an opposing viewpoint, like even if I agreed, like do the devil's advocate thing or something here, right? But Final Fantasy VII is also one of the games that crossed my mind when I thought of the most overrated. And like you, I think that it was a lot of people. I don't think it was like their first like game necessarily for the PlayStation. Well, hold on. I think it was more like anyone that was a fan of Final Fantasy was a Nintendo fanboy, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like, yes, you're right, that Final Fantasy VII was the first game that those people bought that got them into a system that wasn't Nintendo.
Correct.
And I feel like, yeah, I agree that has a lot more. I feel like that has a lot more to do with it, because that was like the gateway drug, right? That opened everything. Yeah. I'm guilty of that. And I didn't like Final Fantasy. My first role-playing game was Chrono Trigger. Woo-hoo. And then it was Secret of Mana. I've never played Final Fantasy, but when Final Fantasy VII, you know, everyone saw the first shot of Cloud on the bike, and it was coming to the PlayStation, I was like, I gotta have it, you know. And I've talked about that before on Off the Cuff. Like I own a memory card in Final Fantasy VII before I, like, 3 months before I had a PlayStation. So yeah, like a lot of people, that was my gateway into a larger world of video games, and I don't regret it. But I don't know. There's so many other better things that have come out of that gateway. I feel like it also, that was like one of the first, also kind of like the first like shot heard around the internet, if you will.
Well,
with, I mean, spoilers by now, if you haven't had Final Fantasy VII spoiled, you know, spoiled for you, but you know, Aeris or Aerith dies. Like, I figured that's one of the first things I remember, like in the early internet days when I was on the internet, that was one of the things that like shot around.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, and I think that's another reason why it's held with such high prestige, is because of the fact that it's one of those games that it's the first time a story has been so, you get so into it, and then one of your main characters dies fairly early, like for an RPG, fairly early into the game.
First disc.
And I think that's also why people have such a strong connection to it, is because for a lot of people, it was their first emotional connection to a game. There's a lot of people I've talked to that have always, myself included, it's like, yeah, when Aeris died, it's, I feel weird saying it, but I kind of cried and, you know, was emotionally invested. And for a lot of people, it's the first time that I feel like they've really got so emotionally invested and connected into a game for that one shocking moment. And it's one of those things that I get that it's an emotionally investing game, but I had been playing, you know, when I was that age, RPGs were my thing, and I had time for RPGs then. And, you know, I played a lot of them, and to me, it was a really touching and shocking moment, but a moment doesn't make the entire game. And I mean people I talk to, they're like, yeah, after that point I kind of fizzled off and I didn't really finish the game. But
that's so early to give up.
I know, but it's I still regard it as one of the best games ever. And it's just like, dude,
no, I
play it on a hole.
That's crazy. For the whole Aeris thing, like, that was spoiled for me before I started playing the game. Because, like I said, I wasn't actually able to dive into it for like 3 months after it came out.
Well, and I didn't get it until later. But I was going to say, when I bought, I mean, it was the, I know you bought it before your PlayStation, but I was going to say, when I got my PlayStation, I bought it. It was the game I bought with my PlayStation. It was the reason I got my PlayStation was 7.
Same
for you. I just didn't, you know, jump out and buy the game and the memory card first. I bought it all together.
Well, the reason being was it came out in September. It was way cheaper for me to get the game and then wait until Christmas and get the PlayStation for free.
I almost want to say I had a Greatest Hits edition of it. For some reason, I think I waited that long.
But for me, I mean, I didn't get that. I didn't come away from Final Fantasy VII with that at all. Like, Chrono Trigger was that for me, like that.
Well, and yeah, same for me. I was gonna say Final Fantasy I, Final Fantasy II, and Final Fantasy VI and Chrono. Like, I had played all those games, and like, just, I mean, there's some serious in-depth storytelling going on in all of those Final Fantasy games, but it didn't have those super swanky polished, you know, cutscenes that.
Yeah, let's talk about super swanky polished cutscenes. Holy.
They look like crap now.
I know why people want that game updated. I totally understand it.
And it's one of those things that I would kill for a 6 upgrade and redo, but.
So. That is, we both agree that that was a very overrated game. Now, in the interest of time, when I think of an underrated game, let's see here. Just side note, the first overrated game that sprung to my mind was Destiny.
I'm still I don't want to talk about Destiny.
That was the first one that sprang to my mind.
I'm so angry. It's like a fresh wound. It's just festering. I mean, it smells like gangrene at this point.
Change the Band-Aid, man.
I know. And I'm just like, the second expansion pack's about to come out, and all I like see is articles that just go, this is going to be the thing that brings Destiny back and is going to, you know, make all the waiting worthwhile. And it's like,
not if I have to pay for it.
Fuck you guys. It should have been in the main game. I mean, God, why? It's like that damn picture that I sent you. We get the bun of the burger when we spend our $60. And then in order to get the beef, the pickles, the tomato, and the cheese, I got to pay extra money to get all of them in DLC. And in order to have a decent sandwich,
I will take the other side of this one.
$20.
I will take the other side of this one.
Go for it.
I totally agree with that illustration that you put in there. However, if you have to think that, I was thinking about this today because Jason sent me the same image and I was like, ha, Danner shared that with me yesterday. I think that's kind of also personal opinion, right? Like, there are obviously a lot of people that had a lot of fun with Destiny and they don't feel like they were shorted out of their $60. Obviously, the amount of time that we put in the game is, you know, still, that was definitely worth like a $60 game. Were we bummed that other stuff wasn't in there? Yes. But I feel like that still was between the entire sandwich that was Destiny, I feel like that was worth like the $60. But knowing what was the way that game was publicized and the way it was, you know, the PR for that game, that's what actually made it feel like it was just like two loaves of bread instead of like everything in the middle. But the other thing I was thinking of, like, there are a lot of games that don't nickel and dime you to death. Like Tomb Raider is pretty solid. I think they have DLC for that, but I think it's like multiplayer skins or something like that.
It was multiplayer stuff, yeah.
So there's that. The Arkham games have all been pretty good. The Uncharted games have been really good. Yeah. It just comes down to like what you feel your $60 is worth, you know, like.
I guess for me, when it comes to Destiny, the best way I can describe how I feel is I feel that this game was produced by Peter Molyneux.
I can see that.
That's exactly. I feel like it was super hyped up. I feel like they made all these promises and just it didn't live up to the expectations of what they were hyping.
So you heard it here first. Destiny is this generation's Fable.
Yep, that is exactly what I was getting at.
So, all right. So, underrated game.
I get a big one that sticks out for me. There's two big ones that stick out for me.
Now, here's what's interesting, because you got this out of doing your list. I also compiled my list yesterday, and I realized I kind of went down. Almost every game I ever played was on my list, and I realized I didn't play that many games. Like, and if it wasn't like any game that wasn't on there, obviously wasn't worth being rated. Like, I really went through my head, my memory as best I could. I was like, okay, what did I have for the Nintendo? What do I remember playing on the Nintendo? If I remembered playing it, it went on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Because that meant somehow I had played it enough to warrant it being considered a favorite game. Well, but at the end of the day, gaming for me didn't become a huge thing until like the 360 PS3 generation, because that was the first generation I had disposable income.
Yeah.
And I could buy a game whenever I wanted versus waiting for like Christmas or my birthday or something to roll around or scrounging up $50 to buy a game. So When I'm sitting there and I'm thinking of all the games that I've played, one of the most underrated games, but I feel like it was underrated only because, not critically, but sales wise, was Mirror's Edge.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first one that comes to mind when I think of an underrated game. So I'm interested to see what yours is, because I know you favor a lot of things like more from like your childhood, like Link to the Past. And I'm not saying that's an underrated game.
The ones that I picked for my underrated games, I feel are legitimately underrated. Like for me, I think Mirror's, I can see where coming from on Mirror's Edge, but I feel like Mirror's Edge was more of a critically acclaimed game, but the audience just wasn't there for it.
Right.
And it was also a game where I understand why it didn't appeal to everybody, because it was a game for me that I got about halfway through and I was like, okay, I'm kind of done with this. It was pretty and I liked the concept. I had a really hard time connecting with the game and getting into the game. I liked it for the fact that it was different, but it was one of those, the moment I hit like a wall and couldn't figure out where to go in the game, I was just kind of done.
I think the other reason it sticks out for me too is because that came out in, what was that, 2008?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the fall where EA had like opened themselves up for like new IP to try new things. We got Dead Space that fall, and Mirror's Edge were like the two big ones.
Yeah.
And Dead Space is the one that took off running, and Mirror's Edge is the one that got left for almost a decade now before we'll see a sequel. Yeah.
Well, and I'm no stranger to being a big fan of games that don't take off with the mass audience. I was going to say, because Psychonauts has always been one of my favorite games, and that's a drum that I've beat on for a long time, and I feel like it has the recognition and people know about it, and just people choose not to play it.
Well, let's talk about a game.
But to me, that's not a game I wanted to talk about.
Well, you know what? That's a good. It's interesting that you bring that up, because you said that you hit a wall in Mirror's Edge and didn't know where to go.
Yeah.
That happened. I have Psychonauts. I bought it on Steam and I was trying to play it and I hit a wall and couldn't figure out where to go.
Yeah. Right. And I get that. I got stuck on that game multiple times the first time I played it.
But I'm not knocking on Psychonauts at all. I've heard nothing but good things about it. And also, anyone knows from off the cuff, I mean, I'll ask questions about stuff, but I generally don't like to have my own opinion on something unless I've played said thing. So
for me, and it was fairly, I played it within the last 2 years. It was a PS3 game, and Xbox 360. It's Spec Ops: The Line. And I know I've briefly touched on the game before, and I feel it's one of those games that I think because it's a military style game that it got passed over because it's not a Call of Duty, and it wasn't a game that was, I don't even think it had multiplayer.
I don't think it did either.
And it was just, it was a narrative driven military game. And the interesting thing about the game was the fact that it had probably one of the darkest, grittiest stories that I've ever seen in a military game. Now, it's a little buggy. It's not as bad as half the shit I've seen on the current generation. It was a little buggy and some of the mechanics weren't, you know, amazing about the game, but it was one of those games that the story was so well fleshed out and so well acted by the voice actors that it makes those other things that are issues in the game just kind of fall to the side. And it's one of those games that I feel if people are burnt out on military games, it's a game that they should check out because of the fact that it's a breath of fresh air, but also I want to put, it's a very hard game to play because it puts you in some situations that you would probably never, ever want to be in. It is very, very dark. But it is just amazing storytelling.
I haven't played it, so I can't. That's one of the, you know, I just, I've heard nothing but good things about it. I'm not a big military shooter guy.
Well, and that's the thing. It's kind of like I would almost say it's military style, but it almost plays like Gears. Because it's a cover shooter.
I shouldn't really say that. I should say it more of I'm not big into it's a first person shooter, right?
No, it's third.
Oh, I thought it was first person.
No, it's third.
See, that shows you how little I know about that game. So,
and it's one of those games like you can find it for PS3 and for Xbox 360 for $15 to $20. I want to say you can get it for now. At one point in time, it was a PlayStation Plus freebie game. And that's when I picked it up because I didn't know a whole lot about it. And I literally sat down not expecting a whole lot out of the game. And literally the first sequence that I got through in the game, I was just like, okay, I'm in. The intro of the game, I want to say, takes place halfway through the game type of a thing. And then it goes back to the beginning. So you start off on a helicopter tearing ass through a middle. Oh, crap. I can't think of the name of the city. It's a city in the Middle East. I can't think of the name of it all of a sudden.
It's not
Dubai.
Yeah, that one.
It's Dubai.
Okay.
You're in a helicopter in Dubai flying through all these giant towers with a chain gun during a sandstorm trying to protect your vehicle. And just all hell's breaking loose. And that's the intro of the game. And then it's basically you guys walking through the desert and coming into Dubai, and there's a hellacious kind of military coup going on, and you're a very small force coming in to basically kind of find out what's going on. And the more and more stuff that goes on in the game, the more it feels like something really bizarre is going on. And then it just, the entire story kind of turns up on its ear halfway through, and everything that you thought that you understood was going on, you didn't. And it gets just batshit crazy in the last 15 minutes of the game. And it is amazing. It's one of those, I want people to play it, so I don't really want to spoil it, but it's one of those, like, it's really cool. It's got a really cool things going on in it. So, if you like good stories and don't, you know, if it was going to say, if you're one of those people that like the Walking Dead games and you just love the story driven nature of like the Walking Dead and the Telltale games, it's a little more actiony, but it's got that kind of story that those games have.
You know, I almost want to try and start some shit. By saying Arkham Asylum is overrated.
Arkham Asylum's overrated or Arkham City's overrated?
Both. I mean, the reason being is because people talk about them like they're like amazing. Like, don't get me wrong, I enjoy Arkham Asylum, but at the same time, I can sit back and the outside of like the combat, like, I'm trying to look at the, when I'm saying this, like, I'm looking at like the base gameplay mechanics. Like, if you want to talk to me about how awesome the story in Arkham Asylum is, I'm not going to argue with you. But if you want to get like in the nitty gritty of like the gameplay mechanics, I think really the only thing that game has going for it is its innovative combat system. Because I feel like it's this perfect mix of like real good combat, or combat that feels great mixed with like Splinter Cell style stealth mechanics.
Okay.
And like, it's one of those things where they found that right lightning in a bot, like that right mixture, right? They threw in like some Splinter Cell good story Unreal Engine graphics.
Oh, I was gonna say, I mean, it's a BioShock style graphically. I mean, it's insanely detailed environments.
Well, that's the Unreal Engine.
Incredibly polished.
Everyone looks like they're sweating.
Yeah.
but it
looks like it's just rained everywhere. It's like a damn movie set on there. I was going to say, I think Arkham Asylum is deserving of the praise. To me, it's City that I don't think deserves
no,
the praise.
No, City absolutely does not deserve the praise it gets.
Like I said, I think, way back when we talked about City on Off the Cuff, I still stand by my description of the game as a ADD fever dream. Where there's just so much shit to do in that map that only somebody with severe ADHD would be able to handle that game at any great pace. Because they just bombard you with shit in that game the moment you get out of that intro session.
Yeah.
And it just, the entire game feels like a mess. Like, there's a specific way to play that game where it doesn't feel like a mess. And it's only if you tear through the entire main storyline and then go back and do everything else, where is the only way that game doesn't feel like a goddamn mess.
You know, I did that. I still feel like it felt like a mess. But the only reason is because I adhered the way the story played out in Asylum, where everything was there for a purpose and the story at least got you involved in what was going on. The example I bring up for City is that I never ran into the Riddler.
Okay.
Because you get the little like radio thing and you can dial in and hear radio communications. And I heard the thing going on at the church.
Yeah.
Where the whole Riddler thing like starts out. But I was like, nope, the game will make me go over there when I need to go there. And the story never makes you go there.
Nope. And it's like, there's so many individual stories going on in that game, and that's exactly what they are, is they're individual stories. None of them relate to each other. They are all separate, and they just don't, there's no connectivity. And that's one of the cool things about, that's one of the, I think, the charming things that is going on in Asylum versus City, is the fact that it is an open world, but there's multiple things going on, but they're all related to each other and they all connect together. And it's all one giant storyline, where with City, there is one separate main storyline and there is a bunch of individual storylines that are going on throughout the city. And they just don't bump up against each other. They don't get messy with each other. They just don't intermix with each other.
Even Origin, I feel...
Origin's the same way as City. I think Origin was a little easier to maneuver just due to the fact that we were used to the shit that was in City.
Possibly. But at the same time, I didn't feel like there was something on the map that I didn't need. I feel like they did a better way of...
I didn't feel overwhelmed in Origin.
I think the difference between Origin and City is that Origin gives you, like the story will show you something new that you can do,
mm-hmm.
and then it'll never ask you to do it again, kind of like how the trophies were in Assassin's Creed Unity.
Yeah,
where it's like, hey, try this side quest, like try this particular mission, like the investigative ones, like try that, we'll give you a trophy for doing one, but you don't have to complete all of them. Like,
yeah,
I feel like Origin did that, where City was just like, here's everything, but we're not going to ever give you a reason to at least do one of them.
Yeah.
One last one, and I guess we can kind of debate this one because I think this will be a good one. Over under, just for funsies, GoldenEye 007.
I'm assuming you're saying it's overrated.
I just want to ask you if you think it's over or underrated.
I definitely don't think it's underrated.
Do you think it's overrated?
I
See, the easy one out of here, I could have picked this one, was Perfect Dark. And that's, but I feel like GoldenEye is the harder one.
And I think GoldenEye is the hard... Man. Shit. It's one of those things I don't want to... Okay, yeah, it's fucking overrated. In summary... Okay, here's where I... It's one of those things that I have a hard time, like, blasting a game that I think is kind of responsible for anything. I give props to any game that kind of invigorates the genre or moves the genre forward.
Sets the tone.
And I feel like 007 set the tone for first-person shooters. Do I think there's a lot more... Do I think... there's better first-person shooters out there? Yes, I think there's a fuck ton better first-person shooters out there. It's one of those, and I'm gonna pose this to anybody who's like just twisting in their seat right now listening to this. Go hook up an N64 right now, sit down and play that game, and then you tell me how good it holds up, and then you come back and you complain to me, because that game is just... looks like balls and ass. Like, I don't know what our obsession was with that game when it originally came out. It just is. Oh God. Like, if I tried to play it now, it would just give me a splitting headache, especially trying to play four person split screen
on the TVs
that we played them on. Holy shit. Just wow. Just the thought of sitting on a 24-inch TV, like tube TV, split into four screens, just like even thinking about it, it makes me a little pukey right now. Just because, I mean, like, it was cool for what it was when it came out. It innovated the genre. Me personally speaking, I'd rather play Perfect Dark any day of the week over GoldenEye. I just like Perfect Dark more. It kills me because I'm a huge James Bond fan. I just, when I hear people, like, I've heard it twice at work this week where somebody's been like, man, just give me an N64 and a copy of GoldenEye and I'll be happy for days. No, you won't.
You're lying to yourself.
No, you won't. You are a pretentious asshole and you're just saying things that sound good together. That's all I hear. I'm just going to pick the most nostalgic thing I can think of that everybody likes, and then everybody will give me praise for it.
I think the appeal of GoldenEye was the whole, like, college dorm, all your friends over, like, and not necessarily college dorm, but all your friends coming over. Cause again, the N64 was also the first 4-player console.
Yeah, but honestly...
that didn't need an adapter.
When I was in college, you know what we were playing? We were sitting on the giant big-ass screen TV and we were playing Mario Brothers 3. That's our nostalgia that we were playing. We didn't give a shit about playing 4-player together. What multiplayer games were we playing in college? We were playing SmackDown versus Raw. That's what we were playing.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like... but I'm also saying with your friend... like, when that game... Well, 007 came out, none of us were in college.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, it was also us just hanging out with our friends, like, you know, sleepovers or whatever. I do remember having fun with the multiplayer in the game. My cousin and I decided to, we would always turn on paintball mode, which I'm a huge fan of, as anyone's ever heard me talk about. But we'd also, like, go in that underground cave map and set up with, like, remote mines and defend, like, bases on either side. And we'd try to, like, sneak into the other person's base. It was dumb. It was just him and I playing against each other, but we weren't, like, directly trying to attack each other. We were trying to kill each other with remote mines.
And there was always that one asshole you played with that you weren't paying attention when they selected their character and they broke the no odd job rule. There was always that guy. Because there was always implemented no odd job rules in our games.
So... with that in mind, all the games that we mentioned, I put it to you, listeners, to jump in here on the topic with us. What do you think, or what is your most overrated game, underrated game? What's your over-under on video games? Leave your thoughts and comments in the comment section below, and or on the website. And yeah, so you can find the podcast on geekcastradio.com. You can also find us on iTunes by searching for Off the Cuff. You can find myself on Twitter by looking for at BoothNinja81. Danner?
You can find me on Twitter at Art Danner. Yeah, and that's it.
So, let us know what you think of the new format. Just give us a couple more episodes before you cry foul and say you want us to go back to the old thing.
Quite frankly, I just don't think that me and Sean can be in the same room anymore.
I'm hoping that like the other guys might bring slightly more random topics, but I'm kind of hoping that, you know, the off the cuff guys, the staple of off the cuff guys, might bring more video gamey stuff. So we can at least cover that for Geekcast Radio.
Well, that's fine. I'm never bringing a video game topic again if that's what you're just going to use me for.
No. I'm not holding you to that. I'm just kind of hoping that's the way it kind of shakes out.
Okay.
And it just so happened that our first episode back has to do with games, which is great because I've been wanting to talk about this stuff. So, yeah, I will have to come up with a new sign-off. Until next week, shake a leg.
Or your wiener. We'll be right back.